get serious about building content sites and building a profitable business online? Welcome to the Niche Website Builders Podcast. We bring you the latest field-tested tips, tricks, and strategies for building a profitable online asset. We interview industry experts, share customer success stories, and reveal our own experiences working on hundreds of sites to inspire and motivate you to make something happen. Let's do this.
Hi, Adam and Mark here. Welcome to this week's episode of the Niche Website Builder Podcast. Your host, James, will be along shortly, but we just wanted to give you a little heads up on a couple of things we've got planned for this week and a couple of our sales and promotions that we've got coming up. So first and foremost, you probably listened to this on Tuesday the 13th, and today I'm over on Craig Campbell's channel. So search on YouTube for Craig Campbell if you don't already know him. You probably know him if you're in this space. He's a massive character. And I'm going to be talking to him about our big data project. And that's where we went out and we found 5,000 content and affiliate sites to answer the age-old question of how much content and how many links do I need to get to X amount of revenue per month. And we've got a pretty good roadmap now on how that works based on an average of thousands of websites. And then on Thursday the 15th, Elena will be back on our channel, on the Niche Website Investors channel, talking about her age domain teardowns. She's going to pick a couple of domains from our inventory and tear them down, show the what the backlinks look like, what the anchor text look like, etc. And then also cover off plans, look at competitors in the space, look at the size of the space, the opportunity, and then give her opinion on what you could do with that domain if you were to buy that kind of package. And that's what we've got coming up this week.
Excellent. So, yeah, if you're not already aware, we're running our 12 days of Christmas sale right now. So if you're not, you can check that out. Sign up to our mailing list, go to Niche Website Builders website and go to the contact page and you can sign up to our mailing list there or any of our social accounts and you'll be hearing about those. So we've got different offer on different stuff every day. So it's kind of an exclusive offer every day. We're also launching and or running, we're doing research basically on a bunch of different niches, and we've bought domains and branded them and kind of start a site before we've got any content, if you like. So we've come up with a bunch of ideas for different niches, and we're releasing one of those each day for the 12 days of Christmas. So you can kind of purchase a package with the strategy and the keyword plan already done, branding already done, so if that's something you're interested in, again, sign up to the mailing list or check out any of our social channels. But we've got that right now leading up until Christmas. So
this is the podcast before Christmas, I think. So we'll see you next week to wish you all a Merry Christmas. And hope you enjoy this week's episode with James and his guest.
Welcome to the Niche Website Builders Podcast. Today we have AJ Saunders. Now, AJ's been on the podcast before, but today we dive into some new topics and we have some great conversations within this. So anyone who's running their websites currently, this will be perfect for you, especially as we dive into his advanced content strategy. So just another way of looking at creating content, kind of the opposite of the content velocity model. And we dive into the idea of anti-content. We further go into repurposing that content, his processes around that. And then we dive into the very unsexy, boring in quotations topic of processes, why you should create processes, how you go about it, what it lets you do, energy flow in terms of working and all sorts of other things within this podcast. It was a great podcast for anyone who's running their own niche website. So sit back and enjoy.
This episode is brought to you by Niche Website Builders, an agency dedicated to helping people just like you build profitable content sites. Niche Website Builders are the hands-off content site marketing agency you always wished existed. It's run by content site marketers for content site marketers, and they help both investors and individuals alike build profitable online properties. They provide a fully outsourced approach to content creation, link building, and done-for-you website builds, the same approach they use on their own six-figure portfolios. For example, their content packages come with a proprietary keyword research process, are written by in-house native English speakers, formatted using templates proven to convert, and uploaded to WordPress with affiliate links added so that all you need to do is hit the publish button. Check them out at nichewebsite.builders/show. That's nichewebsite.builders/show and fill out the form to get coupon codes for 10% more content or a 10% discount on links with your first order sent right to your inbox.
Right, welcome to the Niche Website Builders podcast. Today we have two-timer now, AJ Saunders. Yes. Welcome, AJ.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm good, thank you. So for people who didn't listen to your first episode or are not familiar with who you are, do you want to provide a brief background about yourself and then we'll dive into today's topics?
Yeah, for sure. So I kind of do two things at the moment. So I run an e-commerce marketing agency here in the UK, but we have clients all over the world. And then, so that's half of my life. The other half of my life I spent building out affiliate sites and advising people on content strategies. So yeah, so I'm knee deep in, you know, the stuff day in, day out. I absolutely love it. So yeah, so that is basically me. So I'm, yeah, so I do a lot of what everybody else does, and that's why, you know, I love this podcast. I listen to it all the time. I really enjoy, you know, what you and what Mark, what other people have to say. So yeah, so it's all great.
Nice. No, perfect. I mean, you mentioned obviously you have an e-com agency and you do affiliate sites. Are there things that you've, I guess, that are suitable for both areas? Obviously you have your affiliate websites, you have e-commerce. Are there strategies in both that kind of work for both that you like to use?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So I think it's easier to focus on the data, right? And to get really, really caught up in, well, you know, we need to target this keyword or we need to target, you know, we need to be sending emails like every day and that kind of thing. But I think, you know, if you step back and you say, right, you know, what does a human that, you know, on the other end of the screen want? And, you know, therefore it becomes more about, you know, can we create content around, you know, sequential content that answers all of their questions so that when they are ready to click on, like, buy a product for our e-commerce site, they're ready, right? Or if they get to like the best, you know, the best hamburger, you know, press or whatever, right? They've gone through enough content with us that they trust us enough to buy that product. And so yeah, there are lots of similarities, and you know, I try, you know, whether it's for my own stuff, you know, I try to treat myself as a client, right? Because that's the, you know, I am my worst client, right? And but also I know if it works with what, you know, with what I'm doing, it will work with other people's businesses as well, right? And yeah. So I just try and encourage, you know, myself and my clients to, you know, think of that person at the end, you know, and to, you know, it doesn't matter if you're selling, you know, hamburger presses, you're doing affiliate, or you're actually selling, you know, actual, you know, like hot tubs where, you know, you are the retailer, and you know, you still have a burden of duty to try and educate that reader and to keep that really engaged and informed, and to do things in an ethical, honest way. So yeah, so I think there's loads of similarities between the two. I think good marketing is just good marketing. It doesn't matter what you're selling or how you're selling it. It's good marketing, right?
Yeah, for sure. But before we dive into your advanced content strategy, we'll talk about, I wanted to cover just further on this as well.
Please.
I mean, you mentioned writing for the reader, I guess, if they're searching the best hamburger press. It's a good example to use. I'm assuming you might have a fast food affiliate website or something going on, but the best hamburger press.
I wish.
how do you convey, I guess, that value to the reader within that affiliate article? Do you maybe have some examples of things you would cover in that article to, I guess, persuade the reader to buy?
Yeah, so I think it's really about understanding, you know, the intent. So if you're writing about, say, you know, the best hamburger press, or I'm going to try and think of a better example, you know, it really is about, you know, so saying, right, you know, I have this, I've used this, and this is, you know, this is how, or, you know, I've talked to people that have used this product, and they've said, you know, obviously reading reviews, and they've said, you know, it's good on this, it's bad on this, and so it's suitable for this. Because I think, you know, if you're writing content and it's disqualifying, you're actually saying, you know, like, this won't work if you're looking for X, but Y will, product Y will. I think that actually gives, that builds trust, because the reader then sits there and thinks, well, actually, you know, okay, cool, they're not saying this is great, they're not saying this is the most awesome, like, product ever. They're saying it, you know, it's good for X, you know, and actually, you know, it probably will suck at all the other things that you may want to do with it.
But actually, that's really reassuring. So I think that that's one way, you know, really kind of building trust and educating your reader. I think another way is it is really just saying, you know, if I was in their shoes, what would I want to actually read? And quite oftentimes not, you know, you don't want to read something, you know, like the history of, you know, the classic examples I give is, you know, so you get a puppy, you know, the puppy pees on the carpet, right? You don't want to you don't want to go to Google and get a history of dogs, right? You literally want those three tips that are going to help you stop the damn thing from peeing on the floor, right?
Yeah.
I know that sounds really, really basic, really reductive, but it, you know, it's the truth, and it's saying, right, okay, so, how can somebody get the dog to stop peeing on the floor? You know, you may be able to you know, train it, you know, you may also get pads, you know, etc. And so it's like, it's basically saying, right, you know, if I was in that situation, what answer would I want and how would I want that answer to be, you know? And then actually, so a great example, so on the site that I've run, I wrote it's not really a review article a couple of weeks ago. I wrote about, you know, products that work with this particular brand. And I reached out to the brand and I said, like, I'm going to write an article on this. You know, can you tell me anything more? And they gave me two products, right? And they said, but, you know, these are the specifications you should be looking for other products that should work with our. Oh, so nice. I was able to say in the article, right, they recommend these two products, but they also recommend, you know, you should be able to use, you know, any product that has this these two specifications should work with it. Obviously, we haven't tested, you know, the thousands of products out there. You know, other people have posted YouTube reviews of products that they've used with the systems quite happily. Here's links to those videos, that kind of thing. And so for me, you know, it might seem like a non-article and like a waste of kind of space, right? But to me, like looking at it as the end user, actually, it's really valuable because there's somebody saying, right, I can see that there's a gap. You know, nobody's addressed this question since like 2013, I think, was the last post I could find on this question, right? Mm. But, you know, at least somebody said, right, here's what we can find, here's what the brand are saying that they should be doing. And then, you know, my conclusion was, you know, please get in contact with us and tell us what item you're using with this particular brand, because we want to be able to update this article to fill it out with even more detail so that it becomes even more useful, right? And so, yeah, so that for me, you know, is how I'm trying to be helpful, and I think that's how you can be helpful. And then, you know, another thing you can do, and this is something that I talked with a client about a couple of months ago, and she absolutely loved it. You know, it what I call it, like, anti-content. So, you know, so say you're a sales trainer, right, and you don't teach prospecting, right, because you teach conversion rate optimization, right? So you teach people how to have better conversations. You don't teach people how to get conversations, right? Mm-hmm. You then can write anti-content of, so, you know, we are absolutely useless at helping you generate, you know, your first 20 sales, because that's not what we're good at, right? And to me, that anti-content actually builds a lot of trust, because you're saying, well, we're not the right people if you want to do X. And categorically, you know, and it's that whole, you know, please raise your hand if you're unhappy with X, because we can put you in the right direction, but that's nothing we do. And yeah, the moment I said it to the client, yeah, she absolutely loved it, because she hadn't thought of doing like anti-content, because I think that's just as powerful as saying, you know, well, we stand for X, you know, so we don't do Y, or we stand for Y, so we don't do A. And so for me, that's really, really powerful. I don't think a lot of people are thinking in that kind of way, are they?
No, definitely not. And I think to go down that road as well, you really need to have a deep understanding of your customer avatar.
Absolutely. Because,
yeah, I mean, you might disqualify something that your customer avatar needs, which wouldn't be good.
Right.
So do you have any tips on that part then, on kind of diving deep into developing that avatar?
Yeah, sure. So one thing I actually was talking with a customer last week about is, imagine you're in a coffee shop, and, you know, I use coffee shop because there's generally a lot of people in the coffee shop. They're generally people of all different types of sizes, weights, sexes, you know, professions, etc. And imagine everyone wants to talk to you in the coffee shop, but you can only talk to one person, right? Who is that one person you're looking for? And if you understand who that one person is, that is who you're talking to, right? And so the way to get really, 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 really kind of sharp at that or tight at that is to say, right, you know, who do I resonate with the most? So for me, like with an e-commerce background, because of how I structure, you know, the services that we offer, you know, I generally work with female founders or female CMOs who are coachable, who are looking to scale, and they're doing it for freedom. They're not necessarily doing it for the cash, right? And so for me, that's what I'm looking for. So, you know, if I was in that coffee shop, I'd be looking for somebody that looks professional, probably is on the Shopify app, right? You know, sipping cappuccino, reading, like, you know, Oprah magazine. Or, you know, I'm being facetious here, but you get the idea, yeah. Right? Right?
Mm-hmm.
And so for me, you know, that's what I would say, you know, if you can imagine going to a coffee shop, going to a pub and only being able to speak to one person, but that one person is ready to buy and ready to talk to you, what are you looking for and how can you, you know, make sure that you do speak to that right person?
Yeah, that's good advice. And I wanted to also come back to the puppy peeing on the carpet example.
Right,
because
right.
Obviously you mentioned... you don't want to see, you know, tips, and you don't want to see the history of puppies. Why do puppies pee on carpets? You just want to know how to do it. But yeah. Often you'll search these queries and you'll see the top whatever ranking articles cover the history of puppies. What is a puppy? This and that. All before the tips.
Yeah.
Would you still then include that? But maybe you'd include it under the tips then instead, right, just to satisfy.
Right. I flip it. Yeah. I flip it completely. Right. I would literally in that intro paragraph say, you know, today we're going to discuss how to get your puppy to stop peeing, you know, and we're going to cover X, Y, and Z, right? So then you have your two or three, you know, main tips, and then you cover the tips. Then you can talk about whatever you want to. So if you want to talk about the history of puppies, the history of puppies peeing, whatever, right?
Yeah.
You can then start to cover that stuff. I flip it upside down because I'm thinking, you know, the user wants an answer now. They don't want to read.
Yeah.
Right?
No.
And, exactly. You know, clearly if your three tips are valuable, right, they're going to keep reading. Yeah? And, mm-hmm. and you're going to notice that by time on site. You're going to notice that by, which to me is like a big KPI that I always tell clients to have, right? For me, that's really, really important, you know, is get to the chorus, don't bore us, as the songwriters would say, right? And then you can fill it out, and then you can be more descriptive and more nuanced what you're saying. But yeah, just get to the point, you know, help the user understand, and then yeah, expand.
Nice. I want you to dive. I know you posted recently on Facebook about an advanced content strategy. I'd like you to dive into that, 'cause that's as far as I know from it. So this will be perfect.
Yeah, no, I know. This is hilarious. So, yeah. So one thing that I've been trialing with me and with my clients, and again, I probably use preferences by saying having different strategies in your tool bag, you know, it's just like having tools. So, you know, I know a lot of people talk about like high frequency publishing now or like programmatic SEO, you know, where you're using AI to generate lots of pages very, very quickly, you know, and to me, those are two strategies that you can use. They're two tools, you know, whereas what I'm going to talk about, you know, today is a different tool. So it doesn't mean that what I'm going to say will always work or that you shouldn't do this other thing or you shouldn't do another strategy. It's just that I think being aware of there are different strategies. So if something isn't working, right? So if you build out an affiliate site and actually thinking, oh, you know, nothing's working and we're doing all this content and blah, 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 you know, you can then take a step back and say, well, actually, can we change our strategy, you know, or can we change our tactics and still get to the same outcome that we're you know, the same goal? So does that all make sense? Is that?
Yep.
Perfect. So, yeah, so one thing I've been encouraging, especially B2B clients, is to publish less, but to publish more authoritative journalistic style content that is sequential, right? And what I mean by that is you start with the persona or the pain that you're trying to deal with, that your product deals with, right, at one end.
Mm-hmm.
You then think about what education level do they need to become a client, And then, you know, after they've gone through those, you know, 10, 20 articles, what is the outcome that I want them to take? So is it, you know, buy a course, you know, book a call, take a quiz, whatever, right? And then from that point, it's then how do I then convert them into actually getting some cash from them? And so maybe that's, you know, we get them to take a quiz, and from the quiz we book a sales call. And then in that interim period, what we're doing is doing some email marketing. So we're doing some things like, you know, here's what to expect from the call. You know, there's still time to cancel it if you don't fit this criteria. You know, disqualifying pre-sales. If you talk to any salesperson, they can have that pre-qualifying conversation without actually having to have it, right, via phone. They'll love you for it because their quality of conversations goes up. And if you're in sales, that's what you really want. And then it's about, right, okay, so... Yeah, so yeah, so you're essentially trying to max the solution with a persona, with the education, and then trying to keep them warm before the call and then after the call, and then when you actually get them to sell, you know, buy a solution, they actually know what they're buying and they actually bought in, and you're not having to do all of this kind of rediscovery or, you know, lots of kind of craziness that you have to deal with. If you're just saying, here's a solution to everyone's problem, buy.
Gotcha.
And so
I've got quick two questions on that.
Please.
It sounds like this is less of an SEO strategy, more of a CRO strategy once someone maybe hits that first article. And two, can this be used in a B2C situation maybe? Like if you're selling your own digital product versus B2B sales call?
Yeah. So it's basically re-engineering. So, you know, in, I think it was like 2016 when Brian Dean started Backlink Co., he decided, you know, everyone was doing, publishing multiple articles a day. SEO Roundtable were publishing, I think they're still publishing 6 articles a day or something ridiculous like that, right? I mean, ridiculous in just the amount of content that they're publishing. Not that they are ridiculous. Please.
Don't come at us.
Exactly. So he decided to go the other way and to publish less, but publish better. And so for me, you know, we can really educate our customers to a level where they're ready to work with us. Or they're inspired to work with us. And so, yeah, it is a mixture of, like, SEO, because obviously you want to be targeting decent keywords that are that are actually going to talk to people's pain, right? But you also want to get to the point where, the people that are attracted to you are ready and willing to convert. And so, you know, the classic example, and I can give this, so my agency website, because I help e-commerce brands, I've got this first stream that I've just actually completed, where I go through everything from, you know, what is a digital marketing strategy, what is a digital marketing plan for e-commerce, you know, why do you need a strong about us page, you know, basic SEO tips for e-commerce, those kind of things. So when, you know, if somebody reads through those 10 first articles and comes, you know, and is inspired to work with us, they actually understand how we can help them, and therefore we don't have to do all this pre-work where we're saying, well, actually, you know, we need SEO, what is SEO? SEO is blah blah blah. Because we can now say, you know, have you read that article on you know, SEO, and is that what you're struggling with? And because they've educated themselves to a basic standard, it means that we don't have to waste a lot of time. We can actually say, right, here's the strategy that we're going to do with you, can we crack on? And they're like, great. And so that's how I think. Yeah, that's how I think, you know, you create less content, but better content, and actually get better outcomes, because you're targeting people that are, you know, that you have a solution for, and you're not targeting everybody who you might be able to help.
Gotcha. So then how are you getting, or how are you linking them together where the prospect is able to essentially read them all in sequence, because, or even not in sequence, but just to read them all? Because I'm assuming... Yeah. Say you have 10 articles, you might not be ranking number one for all 10 queries. No, you might be ranking number one for, say, the first one, but you want them to read the other ones. So, and just having a basic internal link of maybe the exact match anchor probably isn't enough to show someone that there is more to read. So how are you doing that?
Yeah, so I think it's on Google. So Google, if you go to Google Help, they've actually, on the right-hand side, they have, you know, what article do you are in the sequence? Right, so that's one way of doing it, right? And then just having that in every article. Another way of doing it is to say, you know, you have your lovely opening paragraph, and then you say, well, you know, today we're going to talk about, you know, how to stop our dog peeing. Last week we stopped about, you know, basics of puppy training. The week before that we talked about, you know, what are puppies, you know, this kind of, I know that sounds ridiculous, but, and that's one way to link it. And then when you've written the next article, you can go and say right at the end, next time we're going to talk about X. Right, and then you just link to that, and then they're through. So that's one way of doing it. Another way of doing it is by then creating landing pages, right, that just, you know, the basic stream, and then creating that the category page. And then you're just saying, you know, and then you're saying, right, so step one is you need to learn about digital marketing, right? Step two is, digital marketing strategy. Step two is you need to learn how to build a basic digital marketing plan. Step three is you need to learn some SEO. And step four, you need to learn about paid, that kind of thing. And you can lay it out, you know, on a category page in such a way, because you can, you know, other with like Elementor, you can do custom coding.
Yeah.
They actually look sexy, it looks really, really attractive, and it takes them through. So, there's a couple of ways that you definitely can do it.
Nice. I guess the question, I can hear some questions now from someone who's like, okay, I've just started a new site. I have zero posts. And say they decide to take, I don't know, maybe this approach where it's like 10 or 20 articles initially, and obviously it takes them a little longer, versus maybe a content velocity publishing model where it's like, okay, I'm going to try and get 30, 50, 100 posts on as quick as possible. Yeah. To get those SEO wins. So I guess what are the pros and cons of either or, I guess, on a new site? Because I'm assuming a strategy like this would work better on a, well, I mean, any strategy probably works better on an age site, but this strategy would work better on a site that's already running and has some traffic?
No, not necessarily, because I think you know, it's just a different approach. So I think, you know, I think with high content velocity, you know, one of the cons is you do have to publish a shit ton of content, right?
Yeah.
And there's no way around that, right? Well, I think, you know, but one of the benefits is you're getting a lot of traffic very, very quickly, you know, if you do it right. Yeah?
Yeah.
But you're going to have a tiny conversion rate, whereas actually if you're talking to people's pain, you have a much lower rate of traffic, but you have a much higher conversion rate. And I think, you know, if you're trying to generate leads for your business, or you're trying to generate, you know, actual quality, you know, quality sales, and take, you know, traffic isn't everything. Your revenue should be our North Star, which I run affiliate sites. You know, I do practice high velocity publishing, because at the end of the day, I can't eat if I don't make revenue, right? And if you're doing advertising like I do, right, you have to have some velocity in there to actually get to make some decent amount of revenue. Whereas I think if you're running a small business, you're trying to be more thoughtful, and you're trying to do more thought leadership, you can be slower, you know. And you're 100% right. Yeah, it will take longer for you to generate, you know, decent amount of traffic. But I think that the quality of traffic that you'll generate will be much higher than if you just kind of sit there and you say, right, we're going to publish it, you know, 100 posts a month.
Yeah, that makes sense. I know what you mean about the content velocity. I mean, I don't do that myself, because as you mentioned, you have to publish a shit ton of content. There's no way in hell I'm going to be writing that.
But
even so, like when I first started my site, because I was doing it in between jobs, I wrote one article, like a full in-depth thing. It was a pretty, I mean, this was before I even knew SEO. It was just like, it was end up being like a moderately competitive keyword. And I ranked pretty well for it. I was getting on a site with one article, I was getting like 20 to 50 people a day.
Yeah, exactly. You
know, just from, because it was quality enough, I guess. So it kind of falls into that same thought process.
And again, you know, it comes back to, you know, if you have multiple tools in the tool bag, you literally can go, right, okay, you know, we can try it for 3 months or 6 months. If it doesn't work, then you can go to your tool bag and pick something else out. You know, I guess great analogy is, if you try something with a spanner, right, and you can't get it off, but you know, you're hammering a chisel and you can, like, shear it off, you've effectively done the same job. You've taken a different approach. Yeah?
Yeah.
And so neither is right, neither is wrong, necessarily. Well, as you ask it with either way, right? Because the only thing that matters is the end result, which is, you know, which in this case is revenue, right?
Yeah, for sure. I guess another question from this is taking that content to repurpose it. Right. So what are you doing to repurpose that kind of, because it can be an absolute ball ache to take articles, make them into YouTube videos, Instagrams, link, whatever it is, that is a time suck to do that. Yeah. But in your opinion, one, is it worth doing? And two, how, if you are doing it or you think it's worth doing, how are you doing it?
Right. So yeah, so I'll let you in on a couple of little secrets that I probably shouldn't, but anyway, I'll...
Perfect.
Because it's just us two, isn't it? You haven't hit the record button yet, have you? So, so with content repurposing, you know, so one big thing that I'm doing at the moment is, so I'm spending probably like 4 hours a week writing an article for my main agency website, right? Which is a ton of time for what it is. But then that means that what I can do is I can go through like the week later and pick out quotes or like, the juicy, sexy parts, right? And they can be turned into things for, you know, like Twitter, Instagram, you know, LinkedIn, you know, splash kind of screens, right? Like quote kind of things that work quite well and have an evergreen kind of nature to it. So there's that. I've also found I can republish like subheadings as like a LinkedIn post or a Facebook post, right? Because as long as your subheadings tell the story of what you're trying to say, people will then go, okay, right, kind of makes sense, or they'll ask a question, right? And you know, clearly you can then in the first comments put a link to the article so they can jump ahead and read the whole thing. But yeah, so that's one way of doing things. But also you can lift out sections. So if you're writing about, say, you know, say you've got 2,000 words on like content republishing, right?
Yeah,
you might be able to turn that into, say, four article, four like LinkedIn posts or four Facebook posts or, you know, even eight, because you're just pulling out sections that make sense by themselves as a standalone kind of post. Gotcha. And then you're just slightly reformatting them so they read easier on that platform, because obviously, you know, on your website, you know, you can get away with probably three lines per paragraph, whereas on something like Facebook and LinkedIn, probably you can get away with one or two. So yeah, it's just reformatting slightly. The other thing, and this is something that I haven't tried, so I'm a massive hypocrite with what I'm going to suggest, but I haven't tried it, but I'm going to say it anyway, because, hey, that's what we're here to do, right? You can always turn, like, a piece of content into, like, a discussion topic, right? And then shoot, like, a video with you and a colleague, or you and a couple of people, or you discussing that as, like, a video, then becomes a YouTube, becomes clips for your social, becomes an audio podcast, that kind of thing. And so you're then encouraging people to go read the article, but also having a more nuanced, qualitative discussion about what you said and why you might have said it, and dragging other themes. And then, you know, obviously, if you do it with a couple of people, more like a roundtable event, you then get all those people's opinions, and then you're probably just going to really scratch the surface of what you've actually written. And so, yeah, so you can always take it in that direction. And I know very few people are actually doing that in terms of actually, you know, building out qualitative, you know, meaningful discussions about articles that they've read or they've written themselves, and getting other people's opinions and bouncing ideas that way. I think that can be really, really impactful. So yeah, so that's just a few ways that you can repurpose.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that last one. I'll come back to that last point though about the roundtables and talking to other people. But before that, cool. Are there any platforms that you've found that seem to work best when repurposing the content?
No, I found platforms that don't work very well.
Which of those?
Well, so here's the thing. So, you know, your digital marketing strategy, you know, so your overarching plan should involve trying different tactics. So for me personally, like, I found there's just too much noise in terms of digital marketing, in terms of the other kind of sites that I run on Instagram and on Facebook, right?
Yeah.
But I found, like, in terms of teaching people about digital marketing actually works really, really well on LinkedIn, because people are more receptive on there, right? So it doesn't mean that I don't publish on Facebook and Instagram and Twitter, right? It just means that I'm more conscious that I'm writing for LinkedIn, and therefore, you know, my majority of my time is spent on LinkedIn, and then I'm repurposing things across or sharing across platforms, right? Because that creates the halo effect of, you know, you are being seen everywhere, you know, even if the message, you know, you'll be able to consistent message out, right? So for me, that's super important to do. But it's obviously super important also to realise that actually you can't win at everything. But you shouldn't. You should be testing and trying all these things all the time. And if things do work out, great. If things don't work out, great as well. Yeah, but you shouldn't stop doing them necessarily because they haven't worked out. You should just scale back, go back to bare bones approach.
Is there a way to, or are you automating some of this posting, or are you going into each account manually and posting?
So, LinkedIn, I'm manually posting, and it literally is just if where I feel inspired that day to write something, or where I think like it gets to 4 o'clock, I think, oh crap, I haven't written anything on LinkedIn yet. And then I go and find something to write, or in the last couple of months, I now have a spreadsheet with like everything that I've posted on LinkedIn for the last 2 or 3 months now. So if I'm really uninspired or really bored, and I can't think of anything to say, I can just look through that and then either share something again, maybe with a tweak, or maybe I can just grab inspiration from I talked about that like a month ago, where I kind of just publish a section of that really long post again. So I've found that has worked. The one thing that I've started doing in the last couple of weeks is actually with Meta, especially, is Meta has a really, really great back end in terms of scheduling things out. And because it's graphical in how they display things, it makes it really easy for you to actually see where your posts are landing and how that's working. And then, I do quite a bit on Pinterest, just because Pinterest, if you create images anyway, why not put it up on Pinterest? I also find that Pinterest actually helps posts get indexed quicker. Don't quote me on that, but that's my experience, right? And so, so I'm just like, cool. So, and Pinterest has a good scheduler, but I've yet to find a tool that can do all of this stuff without it being an absolute ball ache, without having to remember standing on one foot and type, if you have an idea about a platform that can do everything, then yeah, sure. But I guess the most important thing to kind of say, so I'm very process driven. So for me, I like writing out process charts, I like having pretty documents, right, that just make everything easy because I'm following a checklist and not actually having to think, right? And so one change that I made 3 weeks ago is I just wrote out the month, so the last month, so November, and then this month, December, and I literally scheduled that. So I was like, okay, right, every Thursday I'm going to send a newsletter to this list, right, put that in that chart, right? And it just means that every day I log into those documents and I go, okay, right, today I need to send 10 outreach emails to potential clients, I need to, put up a Facebook, post, etc. Or, I need to publish a blog post or whatever. And just having that as a marketing activity kind of checklist, has really, really simplified everything. And it means that I'm not then thinking, oh, well, when was the last time I published on Twitter? Because it's on there. I'm not having to think. So I think tools are only as good as your processes. And I think if you don't have any processes or you don't have any kind of documentation, it's as bad as you'll make it. So, I know that's not the answer you wanted.
No, that's good. That's good. I'm going to come back to that too. But I know we talked about just before about kind of like creating those videos, roundtable, talking to people.
Yeah,
I think if someone has a personal brand, man, doing a podcast and stuff is like the easiest way to create unique content for your stuff. I got a podcast for my own site that's doing quite well, and it's let me expand my business like crazy, because I've brought a lot of my podcast guests onto my business as people to essentially help create content, all that kind of stuff. I actually just bought a whiteboard as well on Black Friday, so I can, because I started creating YouTube videos. Right. And I was like, I got to a point where I was like, fuck this. Like, I hate doing this because it was, man, you have to be like, okay, I've written the articles, but I got to go, okay, this is the topic. This is what I'm going to talk about.
Yeah.
Set the camera up, set the lighting up. Do I even feel like sitting and talking and filming today? Or I'll just sit and write. If you sit and write, you don't have to do anything. Put some music on, whatever. No, it's simple. But with the video, you got to gear yourself up. I got to talk, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
So, and then obviously I was like, okay, I'll just do a podcast. Then I don't have to talk. My guest talks.
Exactly.
But I'll probably come back to do a bit of YouTube to expand the business as well. But Yes, do you have any advice for anyone kind of jumping into that space of trying to get into video or repurposing articles into video?
So, yeah, sure. So, I just see, you know, whatever medium you're doing. So if you're doing like an audio podcast, we're doing videos, you know, it doesn't really matter where you're starting or where people know who you are. It's the fact that you want to share and you want to collaborate with other people, and it's more about that than, you know, trying to be, you know, jump on the personal branding bandwagon or whatever. And so I do think it's really, really important just to think, right, can we try this, you know, for 3 months, see how we feel after 3 months, see what reaction we get. And then it's about minimal viable product right at that point. So it's like, can we just leave the camera and like set up so that, you know, shooting becomes like second nature? Yeah. And then just saying, right, okay, so then, you know, how can we then keep ourselves motivated? So, you know, can you book out, you know, 3 guests for the next 6 months, right? That you then have to talk to because you've agreed that you will, you know, and therefore that becomes a completely different situation at that point. So I think structure, having good structure kind of takes care of all of that procrastination bullshit that we all deal with, right? Yeah. You know, if you're forced to do something because you agree that you will with somebody else and they're going to turn up, you think, oh shit, I better do something about it, right? And so, yeah, so I think that, but I also think, you know, I hate to reference this person because, you know, it's just not my, but, you know, if you go back and watch Mr. Beast's first video, I apologise for mentioning him, I apologise. It wasn't very good, but he's kept going, he's kept iterating, you know, right?
Yeah.
And I think, yeah, if you're passionate about that, and I think the other great example is, you know, Rand Fishkin as well, right? The first couple of White Ball Fridays were probably horrendous, right? But he's now at the point where, whenever you think of explaining videos, you think of Rand, right? In terms of like SEO and digital marketing, right? Mm-hmm. And because he's cornered that kind of, you know, element, you know, he's done really, really well. But again, you know, he wasn't great, you know, he didn't turn the camera on and was great. He took the camera, he was probably really, really, really horrendous for the first, like, 50 attempts. So, yeah. Which actually leads me nicely. So, I did a podcast a couple of months ago, which I think is coming out this month in December, and me and the host talked after, and I know he won't mind me saying this, but he said to me, you know, like, the first 60 episodes for him were just terrible, because he just felt wooden, he felt rigid, he felt terrible. But he knew that was the best way for him to stand out in his market.
Yeah.
And so that's where he kept going. Now he's on to something like 150, 160 like podcasts, right?
Yeah.
And he's now on the flow and now everything works and everything's seamless and it's all great, right? But he said, you know, obviously if I gave up after the 50, I wouldn't have got anywhere. And, you know, and the lightness that came on the 61st episode was, you know, when the magic kind of happened, right? And so, yeah, so just encourage people to keep going. You know, you don't get great overnight. You get great by doing it consistently.
Yeah, for sure. Safe to say, I haven't watched one Mr. Beast YouTube video, so I'm out of that camp.
Fantastic.
Definitely.
He's been forced on me many a times. I've never gone onto YouTube searching for him, so.
Yeah, for sure. But I completely agree with you with the idea that you can kind of get stuck, because obviously I think we all listen to or watch podcasts, and you have, yeah, I guess all the professional podcasts now are in person, nice microphones, stands, camera work, all of it, and you go, you know, like, I can't do that now, and is anyone going to listen to or watch my Zoom call podcast?
Yeah.
Because that's not in person when you got this going on. Yeah. And yeah, I mean, I'm 37 podcasts and I'm on my own podcast for my site.
Right.
And it's been really good. I mean, like, yeah, as I mentioned, it's opened so many more channels, and I started on Zoom.
I started on Zoom and
eventually moved to Riverside as well. So I've got this microphone now, if anyone's watching.
Nice.
It's cheaper than the other one I had, but it's fancier and it sounds better. So, you know, as you get going, you can start doing things. And as you mentioned, the consistency is huge. Like, I told myself I'm going to do 100 episodes before I even look to see you know, if before I'd even think about if I'll keep going or not.
And I don't think that's so important. I think, you know, lots of people think, you know, I'm going to be a home run on the first attempt. And yeah, it's it literally is just, right, can we keep going? You know, define success, you know, in advance. I actually just wrote a big article that got released yesterday about this, right? So define success in advance, right? So what does success look like to you, you know, in terms of, you know, whether it's life, whether it's marketing, whether it's your business, whatever, right? But if you define what success is at the start, you know, then becomes much easier for you to judge every decision based on, does this get me closer or further away? I remember, you know, Noah Kagan, when he was working at Facebook, you know, when I said Noah Kagan years ago, this was, he said Mark Zuckerberg judged everything on, is this going to get close to my vision or is this going to take us further away from the vision? And, yeah, obviously, if you're a nuanced person, it's going to drive you nuts if everything becomes a binary decision, right? But by having a binary decision, it actually makes everything easy because you think, is this going to, you know, is this helping me move towards or away from where we're trying to get to, you know, professionally, personally, whatever, right? And yeah, I think that's kind of, that's what you need to do sometimes.
So what kind of targets then, I know it would be different for everyone, but what kind of targets would you set as success for someone who's potentially looking to maybe start doing video or repurposing content or anything like that?
Yeah, so I think with everything, you know, it comes back to revenue. So I think if you're just getting started, whether you've got a blog, whether you've got a YouTube, you know, whether you're doing a podcast, it's how can I get excited about making that first dollar? Because, you know, if you get excited about making the first dollar or the first pound or the first euro or the first whatever, right, making the first 100, it will still be exciting, right? Making the first 10,000, 100,000 is going to be just as exciting as making that first. You know, believe me on that. So, I think you have to really start with like the lowest goal that you can and then exceed that and then keep moving up. Because I think a lot of people sit there and they say, right, I want to make, you know, $250,000 next year, and then they fail. Where then they say, right, how can I do that proof of concept, which is how can I make $10? How can I find somebody that will give me $10 today, you know, to advertise on my podcast or to send me some free stuff, for me to get started on YouTube, right? If you start from low barrier, you push the barrier up, you then actually start to build momentum yourself, you know. And it's the old drug joke, and you probably won't cut this out, so I'll just say it anyway. it's the whole gag. Why do people always get to the top of the building and try to jump off? Why don't people, you know, believe that it can fly? Why don't it start on the ground and try to fly up to the top and then back down, right? But it's that whole mentality of, I think too many people try and start by jumping off the top and they don't sit there and they say, right, how can I make the smallest amount possible, just do proof of concept, and then what does step two look like? What does step, you know, a mentor of mine this year kept saying to me, you're trying to eat the elephant whole. You need to eat it bite by bite. You can't, you know, if you can achieve your goal, you know, like let's just say, you've achieved your goal, you know, and now you're working back, right, step by step by step, step, right? You can't get frustrated that you haven't reached the goal yet if you haven't gone through those first, you know, those first steps. You haven't, you know, kind of built up to it. And so, yeah, so I think that's really, really important to kind of remember.
Yeah, for sure. And I think that also kind of leads nicely into your processes. For me, I guess my processes are mainly in my head. I don't know if that's a good thing. No. Exactly.
Sorry.
Exactly. So I have a written checklist of things I need to do.
I have a written
checklist next to me of things I need to do in the day. But my processes, I guess, well, I think I do most of the things myself anyway, but still, having something written down in there is probably better than what I'm currently doing. So do you want to maybe dive into your processes, what you've created processes for, and then why you've done that or how that helps you?
Yeah, right. So I don't see anything as being too complicated, right? So for me, having a 13-step checklist that says, right, step one. So I can give you the perfect example. So on the first working day every month, I go to all my WordPress websites and check they're up to date, right? Sometimes it's plugins that I haven't belonged to that site for like a week, and therefore we need to go and just update plugins. Other times it's themes, you know, new themes come on, whatever, right? And so, literally, I think in six steps. So, like, step one is, you know, open a browser. Step two is, you know, go to all these URLs, which is, you know, all the, you know. Step three is log in. Step four is check for updates. Check, you know, five is, you know, apply, you know, download and install and apply the updates, you know. Then step six is check that everything is still working, because you don't want, yeah. You're going, update, everything comes to shit, right? But it means that, you know, so whenever I look at that document, because I know those six steps, you know, I don't have to think, right, what is the next step? Because it's all written down and just following, right? But it also means that I now can give that, those two pages, it's a two-page document, right, to somebody else and say, have at it. And I know that they can follow it. So it can be as simple or as complicated as you want. So with a client earlier in the year, I literally, we did a Zoom call and I said to them, right, here's how to develop an SEO checklist, right? And so we did a really bare bones thing of, right, okay, so, you know, number one, find a keyword. Number two, you know, make sure that, you know, that it's not too competitive. Number three, you know, add it into the title. Number four, you know, URL, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, right? And then the week later when we had our next call, the employee said to me, and you know, who's kind of like the marketing woman there at the company, said, well, we've actually gone away and rewritten your checklist. And I was horrified, obviously, because it was perfect the first time.
always.
But you know, for them, you know, I think it was like 15 or 16 steps that I laid out, right? They were just because they were the bare bones, they weren't good enough to give to another employee, right? And so they just went away and rewrote it, so it's much more nuanced. They shoved in screenshots. They, you know, they put in more resources. Gotcha. And actually, for me, that's fantastic, because I'm there to help them develop that mindset of how to build up processes, not to give them process charts. So yeah, so I've got processes for pretty much everything, from, you know, doing things like checking ranks, you know, to backlink audits, to content updates, to deleting posts from websites, you know. And it literally is a just checklist, and it's just literally, can you go through the checklist and tick off, right? And about 6 months ago, I realized Monday morning was a nightmare, right? And Monday morning was a nightmare because I had all this stuff, you know, I had rank reports to run, backlink reports to run, I had to check, you know, revenue of the weekend, check emails, you know. And so it's just like, okay, cool, right, what do I do? I write a really simple checklist. And so I think it's got like 25 steps.
Yeah.
But every Monday, I work through that document as the first thing, right?
Yeah, it's just simplifies it.
But it also means that I don't have to think about what I need to do next, because the checklist tells me. But it also means that I can get through everything faster, because I don't get to 3 o'clock and think, oh shit, I should have done that. Because it's on the checklist, right? So checklists are really, really important. The other thing that's really, really important, you know, is that you go back and you say, right, does this still make sense? Yeah, so you do like an audit once a quarter, once every 6 months, right? Where you just look at things and say, right, does this still make sense? Or has my process evolved where I've actually added some more steps, and I know that I'm doing them, but they're not documented? Because I think a lot of people think we've got all these process documents and they're all great, but they never sit there and think, right, actually, could we add two steps to this document over here, and that actually removes having to do those eight steps over here on that document, so we can simplify two documents into one and makes everyone happy and everyone feel, you know, that they're doing a better job. And so, yes, yeah, so have processes, you know, the literally checklist that you can work through, or you can give to somebody who can work through. Come back and audit your checklist, you know, every couple of months. And then, you know, if you're doing something more than once, either develop templates, right? Or develop writing formulas that actually make sense. So for me, because I've written quite a lot of, like, A versus B type content, right, for my affiliate sites, I now know that I've got templates for those meta descriptions, right, in WordPress, right? So I just need to go back through, like, probably... back a page, and I've probably got that same template written four times, and all it is I'm literally just changing, right, A versus B, okay, right, change that, modify that. But actually, it gives me the jumping off point to actually be quicker. But also, it means that I don't have to be creative, because the creativity is literally changing four words. But it means, right? And so for me, templates, checklists, documentation, all of that good stuff really helps simplify what tasks you have to do and how you got to do it, but also makes your life easier because you're not thinking. Right? And so when you do have to do something that involves thinking, you can actually be more creative. Right? Because you've actually got more bandwidth to think. Can I just talk just slightly more about this?
Keep going.
So, a lot of people, in my opinion, you hopefully will identify with this as well. A lot of people don't think about energy flow, right? Mm-hmm. And so they just think we go hard, we go fast, right? Like they're driving Ferrari down the freeway, right? Whereas, for me personally, and for a lot of people that I've dealt with as clients, or a lot of people that I speak to, if you're having a great day where you're getting a lot of content written, you should just cancel everything and keep going. Because the next day you may come in and think, actually, I cannot face writing another damn sentence, right? But that day you may think, actually, I've got internal links to add, or I want to do some research into this post I'm going to write, and therefore you're working with your energy flow, Mm-hmm. And so I think that's such a big thing. Of course, there are going to be days, there's going to be weeks where you have to force yourself to do some tasks that you don't want to do. That's a given. But I don't think people kind of sit there and think, right, where's my energy today and what is my energy allowing me to get excited about that I can capitalise on and I can push everything else forward?
Yeah.
And so, I do think, if you're more mindful of energy flow and energy, how that energy feels that day or that week, I think that can be really, really powerful for them to actually make good progress.
Yeah, I love this conversation too, because I do that myself, I guess consciously as well. So some days I know I'm keen to write, I'll write a lot. So other days I'll have other things, I might publish, edit, whatever it is. Other tasks that don't require you to think creatively to do that. And you can also get yourself in that state. I know, for example, in the mornings, if I know I'm going to write something and I'm almost like I'm excited to write about it, eat breakfast, I have half my White Monster in my can. I have, if anyone's listening, Above and Beyond Deep Sets on YouTube. They're like 3 to 10 hours long. You chuck one of those on and you start writing, man, you hit this flow state and you can go at it for however long. I'll pump out 3,000 word fully researched articles with that process. And you can put yourself in that state doing those things, like having a routine, which is really, which is really nice. And I guess the processes you mentioned allow you to do that because you don't have to think about what else you need to do, which is nice. But one question on the process, or SOPs, or whatever you want to call them.
Cool.
For processes that are not binary. So for example, you mentioned, obviously you go open the browser, log in, update, plugin. For processes that are more like, you mentioned, I think content audit, another one that comes to my mind is, for example, if you're editing on, say, Grammarly.
Right.
Some things are a little more subjective to maybe what you would change. So how do you create a process there that you would follow, but also potentially have someone else follow if you outsourced it?
Right. Yeah, that's a fantastic question. I think then it comes back guidelines, right? I think you then try and write out guidelines that help people understand the framework and maybe not the task, and therefore you then allow them to make mistakes and you come back and you then edit with them. So somebody's checking stuff with Grammarly, Grammarly I love, I'm dyslexic, I absolutely love Grammarly, don't get me wrong, but it can be the most frustrating program to use because sometimes it will say things that are grammatically correct, but are parlance incorrect, right? Because of how we talk and how we communicate as human beings, right? There's nuance to it. Or, I actually wrote about this a couple of weeks ago. There's a hardware chain here in the UK, in the Southwest, called Proper Job, which means, which is local slang, right? I won't go into it, but it's local slang, right? I think you probably get that as well, don't you, right? But of course, if you put it into Grammarly, Grammarly should have a shift because it doesn't understand.
Yeah.
Right? But because enough local people understand that slang, it's fine. So the other thing is about having guidelines of, right, what's acceptable, what isn't acceptable, and then really mentoring the person who is running that process or running those, or who's having to work within those guidelines, to really illustrate what good practice and what bad practice looks like. And a great example, so earlier in the year I released this course on how to build a brand guideline document, right? And it basically talks, you know, it basically says, you know, who do you want to talk to, how do you want to talk to them, how do you, they want to be talked to, how do you, they don't want to be talked to, right? And a whole load of other things. And a client of mine came back to me and said, well, we did the exercises, it was great, it was really, you know, helpful for us in terms of actually getting clarity on what we stand for as a brand, etc. And then we gave it to a writer, and the writer came back and turned into something that we were unhappy with. And I said, great, that's what's meant to happen. And he looked at me confused, and I said, you know, documentation is only as good as, you know, your internal thinking. And so if somebody has come back and the feedback is terrible, then you need to go and expand the document. You need to go away and think again, right? And actually go and say to them, so what didn't you understand? And you need to then, you know, mentor them and mentor your documentation, your processes, so that it actually is clearer and it actually is more nuanced with how you want things to be done. And so, yeah, so that's what I encourage people to do, is really, you know, think about the guidelines in their situations, but also think about how you can convey and how you can mentor people into getting the result that you want to, and how you can then adapt the documentation based on the feedback that you get from them to be more in line with what you, the outcome you want.
No, if I was going to implement, I guess, creating some of these processes, are you just putting this in Google Docs and then just opening the Google Doc in the morning kind of thing?
That's one way of doing it. I have everything on Word, just because I'm
Luddite. Same thing.
but I know Nick. Can't remember his second name. I feel terrible. I'm having all these mind blocks. Nick from Work Hello.
Nick Jordan.
Nick Jordan. That's it. Thank you so much. I feel such an idiot. Sorry, Nick. I know him and Cordana, who's his COO. They use something else, and I guess I can ask you a link after, because they use, I think it's Slight. Yeah, it's Slight, which is just a way to document things and interlink things that they think is much better than Notion or Slack or whatever. I know for them that works really, really well. And actually, I've reached out and talked to Cordana and said, right, what are you using? Because I know Nick had mentioned it in the podcast. I think on one of these podcasts, actually, when he mentioned it.
Yeah.
And I was like, that's cool. So I know I need to go and look at that as a way to build out that whole back end of things without having to worry about Google Docs going missing or getting too complicated. So yeah, so but I do think, you know, Google Docs is absolutely incredible. I think if you can get on there, get started on there, and then think about where you can take it to next.
Yeah.
So
the other question is as well, I guess, if someone's, when do you look to build up these processes? Because I can imagine someone starting a site, 10 articles in, and they start building processes, yet they have no traffic, no revenue, etc., etc. So is there a time when you would recommend doing this?
Right. At the beginning.
At the very beginning.
I know that sounds absolutely batshit crazy, but... So, you know, so yesterday I was doing some manual outreach, right, in terms of link building.
Yep.
And I was just like, okay, cool, I was just like, okay, right, I don't want to do this anymore, so how can I hand that off to somebody else? It's like, that isn't generating me any revenue at the moment, right? But I sat there and wrote a 13, you know, step one is do X, right, document. Really, really simplistic, probably no one else can follow it, but that's not the problem, right? But it means that even at this early stage in this process, and in trying to do it, I can hand that off to somebody else. But it also means that when I need to bring somebody else in, I've got a basic documentation of what to say and how to say it. And so, yeah, so I'm a massive believer that if you have the right processes and documentation, you can scale far quicker than you could if you hadn't.
Yeah.
And actually you can get a great level of clarity by having all of that stuff doing from day one. Which I know is probably not what you want to hear, or what nobody else wants to hear, because it's difficult, it's messy, it's yeah. unsexy. You know, they want to do the sexy stuff of, you know, doing all the outreach, getting on the podcast, etc. But I think having good documentation is really, really worthwhile. It's especially if you're trying to get free, because I think that's why we all start websites, right? Is to get free of the job, or to get free of running websites. And the best way to get free of having to do lots of the hard graft, essentially, right, is by having good press and good documentation.
Yeah. No, that's a great way to end this podcast, too, with on those processes and everything we cover. But if anyone wants to find you, AJ, or follow you, or see what you're up to, where can they do that?
Yes, yeah, so sure. So they can go to ajsdigitalgroup.com, or they can come follow me on Instagram, and it's @A_J_Saunders. I'm reactive on that. If you listen to this and you enjoy this and you just want to drop me a note and say hey, please do. Always happy to. I'm on LinkedIn if that's more of your jam. But I'm around. I'm available. You can book a 15-minute discovery call with me, which is free on the website if you just wanted to kind of touch base or say hey. So yeah. So
perfect.
Yeah. It's all good.
So if anyone's listening, wants to reach out, you can do that. LinkedIn, absolutely. Instagram. I'll make sure everything's linked up in the description for AJ as well, so you can get perfect, in touch there. Perfect. But thanks for coming on. This was an awesome conversation, and I hope everyone listening kind of got something out of that too.
Yeah, hopefully.
Thanks for tuning in, and I hope you enjoyed the show. Don't forget to like and subscribe wherever you're listening. Until the next episode, goodbye.